Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
You're listening to an Anna's Owl Ministries podcast.
Was Magneto right? Is Magneto right? Will Magneto ever be right? Well, we're going to answer or wrestle with and have fun with these questions on today's episode of Systematic Geekology, along with some of my favorite geekologists. And so welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. Today, our episode is a part of our flagship series and annual theme of 2025 of polarization, finding the good. We know in our world is very polarized right now. And so part of us here at Systematic Ecology, I would say all of us here at Systematic Ecology, have a goal and a vision that we want to create healthy conversations around those things we geek out on and going deeper with our faith. And so why not do that with our fandom and try to model for you all a way we can find the good in the other when it comes to our fandom. And hopefully that will kind of expand out like magnetic waves out into the world and other areas of our life as well. So I'm here with some friends. We have regular host Andy, and then we have a friend of the show who's been on another episode, and we hope she'll be on more episodes, Jill. Jill, how are you doing today, and what are you geeking out on?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you for asking. Yeah. And I am geeking out right now on the Bible. It's like an easy answer to give a pastor, right?
Yeah, there
but,
you go.
Specifically, I came across a copy of a First Nations Bible that I had bought a few years ago. And so it is Native American or Turtle Island translation of the New Testament. And I'm, well, it's both New and Old Testament, but I'm reading New Testament and I am loving it.
Ah, that's cool. So reading that text and how they're translating or articulating those things will hopefully see things in a different light. Like you just, sometimes we just coast on the normal English King James readings of things, but if you read it in a different way, it sticks a little. That's cool. Is there a particular story that kind of jumped out to you so far? You're like, wow, I didn't think of it that way.
Not a particular story, but it's for sure phrasing. It's like things that I would think of as nouns are verbs. It's all very active and it's very much in process. And I find myself like sort of learning about process theology in a new way. And it's really beautiful the way that even the Son of God is like one who acts as the Son of God. It's just really beautiful.
Nah, that's great. Cool. Andy, what are you geeking out on?
Oh, good question. I'm still geeking out on the Karl Heinz Stockhausen joke in This Is Spinal Tap, The End Continues. And it's a Tuesday, so I'm excited about a new episode of Only Murders in the Building.
Nice.
And I was in Edmonton a couple weeks ago and had the opportunity to see a few shows at the Edmonton Fringe Festival, including a 1940s style radio musical drama version of the movie Speed, complete with live Foley and a guy playing Keanu Reeves as Officer Keanu Reeves and a guy playing Orson Welles, filling in for the Dennis Hopper character, which is fantastic from start to finish. An amazing job. Man. Done by these.
That sounds amazing.
You know, amateur slash semi-professional, actors in this, fringe show in Edmonton. It was delightful.
Ah, that's good. You remind me, like, I don't know if I've watched with my family or girls. They're in college. They're older. They're in their 20s, but I don't know if they've ever watched the movie Speed, like an early Keanu Reeves movie. And I was like, you made me want to rewatch that movie. And I wonder what they would think through their eyes as 20 somethings. I'm going to have to do that experiment because I remember seeing that in the theater and it was fantastic. Very, very cool. Yeah. As you mentioned, it's Tuesday as we're recording this. Don't know when this is coming out, but on Tuesdays, I mark my calendar, another episode of Alien Earth. I am loving this show. I'm not like a huge Alien franchise super fan. I do like those movies and I understand their impact on pop culture and even how we see sci-fi and ask the question what it means to be human. And I really think that this show captures the heart of what the original Alien movies were about and the questions that it's asking. And I'm having a lot of fun. There's definitely friends of mine and friends of this show who know a lot more than I do. And so I am definitely texting them after each episode, like, what is this? What is that? Like, we don't know, Will. It hasn't finished yet. We'll find out later. So I'm asking a lot of questions, but I really love Alien Earth and hope that we'll geek out and have a full episode once the series is up. Either of you two watching Alien Earth right now, is that in your bandwidth of fandom?
I am not yet, but that is right up my husband's alley and we need a new show. So I'll maybe tune in.
It is fantastic. I love it. Andy, how about you? You're an Alien fan.
Yeah, the Alien world has passed me by so far, but I've started getting into the Predator series. So maybe it's only a matter of time before that crosses over into Alien.
Yeah.
Purely on the strength of the film Prey and then the animated film Predators. Mm-hmm. Killer of Killers or something like that that came out on Hulu this year. I haven't seen anything else, but those two I thought were well done and kind of got me interested.
Yeah, they have crossed over. They're in the same family tree and they will, I think, continue to cross over. And they're even crossovering into comics too. Like they're jumping right into some of the Marvel DC stuff too. So that's kind of fun too. So yeah. Well, friends, you know, let us know what you're geeking out on the socials and around the horn. There's no shortage of things to geek out on. And I'm a proud geek and with proud geeks here too. So hop in and let us know what you're geeking out on. I really want to thank all of our supporters from Apple Podcasts and Captivate and Patreon. We especially want to give a big shout out and thanks to Aaron Hardy. Thank you for supporting the show. And remember, if you would like your own shout out, you too can support the show for $3 a month and on either of these platforms, we'll be happy to give a big shout out. And if you give us a review, we'll, whether it's 1 star or 5 star, we'll probably read it on the air too. I guarantee you. I will be happy to read your review on air. So let's hop into the episode. When we were brainstorming the polarization theme and finding the good in the other, Andy and I were both like, yep, we got to talk. We got to talk X-Men. We have to put Professor X versus Magneto at the top of the list. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We have these two if opposites attract, magnetic fields attract, opposites attract, then we have Professor X and Magneto from the X-Men franchise, Marvel franchise. And so we have to talk about this. So before we get into kind of nuance of finding the good in each, you know, I think the stereotype or the kind of default understanding is that Professor X is the hero, Magneto is the villain. Well, over the last few decades, that's been blurred some in some of their storyline in terms of the choices that they've made and where they've come around and gone deeper into not just this kind of binary of hero or villain, but a little bit of both in terms of their what they're up to and how they stand for mutant rights in the Marvel universe. So let's go around the horn and share a little bit of our history with the X-Men and these two characters. And if you want to share a little bit of their history and what's intriguing to you about their history, the Wikipedia page is like 10 pages long. So if you really want to go in and get deep dive, it'll take you a week to go through it all. But we can't do the full history of each character, but what's our history and then what's appealing to those characters for us? Joe, I'll let you go first.
Sure. So I started reading X-Men comics with my son. So he's 18 now. And I think we maybe began with the comics and graphic novels when he was 6 or 7. And he did not discriminate between Marvel and DC. He was just throwing everything at me. And X-Men was just one that I really enjoyed. And so I tried to steer him more towards that way. And then, of course, we already had a few movies that were out. So I was really attracted to the X-Men cinematic universe.
Yeah.
Loved it. Always have, you know, continue to love it and follow those movies. And then even before I heard it said, it was really obvious that Professor X and Magneto were based on Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Jr. So that part of the story was really attractive to me and like fun to talk about those ideas and those themes with my son. And when the movies came out with young Professor X and young Magneto, Eric Lyncher. I just remember like looking at, it was my daughter at the time. And I was like, does everyone else know that they're in love? This is clearly a romantic relationship. The chemistry is so strong between these two. There's no way they're not lovers. Mm-hmm. And we kind of, that's like our ongoing joke. And then once you see it when they're young, you can't not see it when they're older. And I love that. I mean, I probably made it up, but I do love that part of their relationship as well. Mm-hmm. And I have always loved thinking of the mutants' rights and their fight for rights being tied into our civil rights, you know, as African Americans, but also as queer community. And I love the stories.
Nice. Nice. Mm-hmm. Is there a particular comic or story arc that like the first one you picked up or the one that your son gravitated toward? Was it like the Dark Phoenix saga? Was it the later ones? Was it 2000s or after the movies? I'm curious, what was the story arc or creative team that literally grabbed his attention?
Well, his attention is probably now on the later X books where Professor X is just outright villain when they Krakoa?
Krakoa age. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That separation. I think that's what he loves the most. I probably gravitate and really enjoy the three movies where they're young, First Class and Apocalypse.
Nice.
I can't remember the other one, but those are my favorites.
That was, we do an extra bonus question at the end of each episode, and we'll reveal that later on what it's going to be. And then we'll talk about it. But one of my questions was going to be, and you know, which Professor X or Magneto do you like better? Patrick Stewart or James McAvoy? Or do you like Ian McKellen? Or do you like Michael Fassbender? You know, was it young or old? You know, do you want, your Star Trek captain or Gandalf? Which one's your favorite one? But so the young Magneto and Professor X were ones that grabbed you. That's good.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Cool. Andy, you and I have discussed X-Men before, and we'll probably do it in the future as well. But brief synopsis, what captured you with the X-Men? And then in terms of these characters in particular, was it that stood out for you?
Sure. Apologies to listeners who have heard this before and to Will, but since Jill and I are getting to know each other, I'll go into a little bit of detail.
You're always somebody's first issue, even comic books, you know? That's right. That's why they put a synopsis on the front page. You never know who's picking it up first.
Exactly. So my journey with the X-Men started with the Marvel trading cards in the early 90s. I was a baseball card collector. There was a store. There's a whole story that just sold collectible cards at the time, which is unfathomable in the present era. But so they branched out into Marvel trading cards, started getting those, got into so I just learned all the characters and all their powers and things just from reading the backs of these trading cards. Then the cartoon came out, started watching the X-Men cartoon. And then my friend in junior high said, hey, you might actually want to read some of these comic books that all this is based on. And so my first issue that I bought and read was X-Men number 4, the Jim Lee relaunch, which I've only later discovered was the very first non-Chris Claremont issue of X-Men after the 17-year Claremont era. Wasn't intentional. It just happened to be that was in print.
What a good jumping on point. You jumped right on. Yeah.
Claremont had written the first three issues of that X-Men, adjectiveless X-Men relaunch there, and then decided to move on to other places. So that was the first post-Claremont issue. It's a Magneto is dead issue. He just died in those first issues 1-3. So it was a while before I got to know Magneto. Professor X is obviously around. I was kind of hooked ever since. I've kind of waxed and waned a little bit, but I went through at one point, made a project of reading every published issue of X-Men, at least the ones that are in continuity, Wow. There may be some like Pizza Hut tie-ins or something like that I haven't read, but you know.
All the oh, Andy, you're not a real geek until you read the Pizza Hut tie-ins. No.
Fair enough.
That's a lot of books. That's thousands of books. Thousands.
You're telling me.
Yeah. Wow.
So yeah, a big fan. Trying to think, Professor, you know, I've seen the movies, seen the cartoons. You know, got to watch the X-Men 97 reboot with my son. That was fun. And Professor, yeah, I will admit that Professor X and Magneto are not the characters that I most gravitated towards. Probably my favorite Professor X story is the issue right after the Executioner's Song, which was the big crossover of like 93 or 94 or something around where Professor X temporarily has his ability to walk restored, and he spends the issue rollerblading with Jubilee. Before you know, and by the end of the issue, he's lost the ability to walk again, and you know, Jubilee helps him back to his chair, and it's just a lovely, quiet issue of the two of them getting to know each other. They, you know, at that point, Jubilee was relatively new to the team; she hadn't gotten to hang out with Professor X much, and so they just sort of bonded. And it, you know, it's a really humanizing look at this guy who, you know, is typically portrayed as a stern authoritarian figure who is more about the ideology than any kind of personal relationships.
Is he a clone in that episode? Or that?
Oh, that's a great question. Yes, but not because of anything that happens in that particular issue or story. But Professor X is a clone going all the way back to the Brood Saga. Yeah. That's the second iteration of Professor X. And yeah, I mean, who knows what version of Professor X on now after all the resurrection in Krakoa and so forth. But yeah. How did he get his ability to walk? And it's something, and I'm not remembering exactly, it had something to do with the shenanigans of Cable and Strife in Executioner's Song, but I don't remember all the details.
Yeah, I just remember that part because I remember asking my son, why can he walk? And he's like, oh, he's a clone. That's why.
it's fine.
It's comics. He'll be in a chair again. He'll be out again. He'll be in a chair again. He'll be out again. It'll happen. Hey, friends, your pal Will Rose here. Sometimes I ask myself, self, have you ever wondered how you can support Systematic Ecology? Yes. Yes, I have. And well, if you're like me, you want Systematic Ecology to continue to grow and thrive. And you can do that by joining Patreon for as little as $3 a month. As a patron, you get bonus episodes. We answer bonus questions that our patrons get to hear. We have special shout outs. We have certain episodes that the patrons pick. So you help us create and curate the content that we put out for the world to hear. You even get free merch. And when I say that we're a worldwide podcast, that I'm not being hyperbolic. Somebody told me that we have over 20,000 subscribers from all over the world, and just half of those subscribers join Patreon for $3 a month. We would be set on keeping moving forward with the tech that we need to have the quality of podcast that we want our hearers to experience. And it'll help us get to certain events and conventions so that we can see you face to face and geek out with you in person. And let me just share that there's no shame, no guilt. If you can't join Patreon at this point, that's okay. That's okay. Just keep listening, keep sharing, keep liking, because yes, we're proud of what we're doing at Systematic Ecology. And friends, guess what? You can subscribe to Patreon for free to receive one extra bonus episode a month via the Patreon or Spotify app. That is fantastic. And we're glad that you're a part of it. That's good. I mean, I think you guys are both sparking some memories for me when it comes to like these different eras that there are the decades and eras that Professor X, Magneto, when we pit them against each other, they you know, in the 60s when it launched as the original X-Men team, the original five, and the 1963, 1965, around there, you know, they were hero and villain. There's this binary, 60s binary between the two. And yes, they're mutants. They are genetically
connected to their superpower ability and mutants, and most of the world fears them and sees them as other. And so Professor X is seen as the one who's fighting for mutant rights, but in a way that's kind of pacifist or defending humans or wanting to show them how good they can be. Magneto comes from there, is like, nope, we're homo superior, we're better, where I'm just hurrying along the evolutionary scale, so let's just get to it, we're the better ones, and gonna act out the way in a way that gives humans reason to fear them. But as the decades go on and their stories get told, their backstories, alternate timelines, different creators play around with their origin story. So you see the more of the nuance between the two. They're not just hero or villain, that they it's really the choices they make in terms of what they're doing around there. So that's why people, you know, and I think people are now seeing civil rights that way too, in terms of Martin Luther King and Malcolm X as well. We talked about this before, Jill, is like James Cone's work, talking about thinking, putting both, Martin Luther King Jr. and Malcolm X side by side, and how can we listen to both their voices and what they're saying with each other. But for me, I grew up on X-Men comics. That my first love in comic books were the X-Men, and going to the spinner rack and the grocery stores and the gas stations and picking up these comics. And so I was right on board with in the 80s, right after Jean Grey passed away. So there was the fallout of her death and what was going on. And I really liked the teams of the Brotherhood of Evil Mutants, with Mystique was leading that group, not necessarily Magneto. So I loved Mystique. I loved this group of X-Men that were, you know, more edgy, and they were the bad guys, and you had X-Men against them, and they're disagreeing in terms of philosophy about how they live out their mutant lives in the world. But you have the original team, all new, all different in the 70s. You have the Agitilis in 1991. Then there's more in there, these big crossover events. But then you have Astonishing X-Men in 2004 with Joss Whedon. Then, you know, there's more development. But then you have the Krakoan Age. And then you even have like the new X-Men with Grant Morrison, that you have these eras and decades where they're portraying these superheroes and mutants who are seen from humanity through this lens of the marginalized or the other, to be feared. And both Professor X and Magneto have their ways of wrestling with that question, how they live in this world as a group of people who are feared from those who are not like them. And so, Jill, how would you pit, if we were going to pit these to each other, you know, and even nuance it a little bit? You know, I do have friends of mine who are comic book fans that say they have a hard time with X-Men because they just don't, there's so much history. We just, even our little side tangent about, wasn't he a clone? Was he not? You know, it's very confusing. There's a lot of characters. There's a lot of new, it's just like, man, how do you like jump in? It's all so confusing. There's a long history there. How do I get into this? But when I started getting back into comics in the early 2000s, because of the X-Men movie in 2000, It was a comic book guy who's like, it's like a soap opera. Just buy issue, hop right in. You'll figure it out. If you don't understand, there's a learning curve. Same way like people come to church. You don't understand everything that's happening in church right now. Just hop in. We'll help you along. You know, when to stand, when to sit, what season we're in, what part of the Bible we're in. You'll catch on. Mm-hmm. So I that's what I say with X-Men fans. Just hop on and go. Now, they don't help it when they relaunch and reboot with like 12 different number ones. We'll talk about that's a whole different one, right, Andy? But in terms of, if you're going to look at these two under a microscope, what are some similarities and difference between the two that we want our listeners to know?
Mm-hmm. So I really think for Professor X and for Magneto, they love their people, right? Mm. They both love mutants. And ultimately, they both want freedom. And they want their mutants to be, you know, their people to be able to live, you know, without oppression. They just come at it from like really different angles. And of course, there's like an evolution where they do at some point, I feel like, kind of flip-flop. But for Professor X, his goal is to have humans and mutants live together in harmony. And I think he's very arrogant. I think he's very selfish in that, like, anything, any means to accomplish that ends are worth it to him. And I see him in the movie specifically of repeatedly putting mutants, especially young mutants who trust him, in danger for the sake of reaching that goal. Like, he's trying to appeal to the best of humanity in a way that I just think is really selfish. I don't actually think he's serving the ends that he eventually wants. And then for Magneto, having such a deep love of the mutants and seeing the absolute worst of humanity, because he was a child during the Holocaust, watched his children be murdered, or not his children, his parents be murdered by the Nazi regime, and understanding the worst of humanity and what they are capable of. He also wants freedom from the mutants, or for the mutants, but wants it by separating. And at some, in some timelines, he wants to dominate the human race.
Right.
But, I don't see him as the villain, actually, in any of the movies. I rarely see him as the villain, and he always comes around. And he, I think they both just have such a deep love for their community and desperately want freedom and liberation and joy for their community, and just can't quite figure out how to get to it and how to shake free of human oppression.
I think that's important. I think, you know, if we're doing the exercise of finding the good, to find not just what their motives or means by which they're doing things, but what's behind it, what's the intent behind it. And maybe there's some common ground there. And I think you see that in the comics whenever they team up, or even some of the movies, they can see each other eye to eye and we go, we both have deep love for our kind. Now, how do we live in this world together with those who aren't like us? And so the tools and the means by which they do that is really what is striking, or the thought experiment, or the sandbox in which we determine hero or villain, good or evil, good or bad, and how do we find the good in the evil? I think that's intent. They both love their people is how they do it. And I think you're right with Professor X. I think, you know, yeah, he creates this school for gifted mutants, gifted youngsters, right? He comes from a wealthy family. He has a mansion. He inherits the mansion. He creates a school, and eventually he trains them so they can use their powers for good and proud of the world. But, you know, some of it, he's putting teenagers out there on the line, out there in the world against these things. How they defend it, and then eventually creators will come about. There's some, he has, his superpower is telepathy, right? His mind control or whatever. And so how is he using that, and the trust or distrust that he had, his students have with him about, are you playing with my mind? Is this me? Is this you? They play around with that some. And
he really abuses that power. I mean, when things don't go right and mutants die, he just erases everyone's memory. That's super messed up.
Andy, shed some light here. Where, how do you see this? You've had a long history with these guys and these teams. How do you see their particular ways of doing things, but also maybe some common ground there too?
Yeah, I mean, of course, as you said, it's been interpreted and reinterpreted so many different times and ways over the 60 plus years of publication history, right? You know, some of the things that stand out to me, you know, that I think are notable is how long Professor X spent lying about the fact that he himself was a mutant, right? I believe it was that same Executioner song crossover in the early 90s was when Professor X finally is outed to the world, or decides to reveal himself to the world as a mutant. So for 30 some odd years on the page, he was pretending to be just a normal guy who ran a normal school, but advocated for mutant rights. And his association with the team known as the X-Men was kind of hidden or nebulous. And then I think it's another 10 years before in the Grant Morrison run, where the school is also revealed to be a training place for mutants and a safe haven for mutants. The connection between the X-Men and the school, I believe, it took that long to get to. So that's an interesting wrinkle. Right, that doesn't map well onto the Malcolm X, Martin Luther King dynamic of, you know, what, here you have Professor X, who just is outright acting like he's not a mutant for more than half, or, you know, for roughly half of his publication history. And yet, you know, there are also plenty of, you know, he has, for that first kind of 30, 40 years, I think thanks and no small part to the cartoon, kind of has that image of the kindly, nice guy who, you know, just wants good things and wants everybody to get along. And, you know, it's easy to excuse some of the odd things that wouldn't make sense in the real world, right? You know, having sending teenagers out as your paramilitary strike force. Right? That's just a, you know, a genre trope, right? It's not like that's supposed to really make sense, or, you know, when they came up with that in the 60s, it's not like anybody really intended for that to be a commentary on anything. It was just, that's what you do in superhero comics.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there were some interesting tensions there. And then obviously, as you pointed out, right, over the past 20, 25 years, people really interrogated, what was Professor X doing? You know, invented what I think Jill was just alluding to there, the Deadly Genesis story, in which a whole team is created in between the first team and the famous second Genesis giant size X-Men number one team that, mm-hmm. you know, died and was covered up. You know, I'm a big fan of the character Legion, who is Professor X's son. And so it's hard not to view Professor X through the lens of largely absentee father. Right? Mm. And again, that's one of those stories where, you know, he wasn't the father of Legion for all those years. Right. And so that's why he doesn't. That's why there's no reference to Legion, because Legion hadn't been invented and that wasn't part of X's story. But now in hindsight, you go, well, wait a minute. This guy was the father for all those years and you know, never. That never came up and he never talked about it. He never visited, right? So now you have to deal with that. So there's all these things that are kind of quirks of how these things get published and how these things accrete over time that I think have dragged Professor X down in a way that makes him harder and harder to accept as a straight ahead hero or icon. Whereas Magneto, you know, out of the gate was a, you know, Silver Age villain of the highest order, just, you know, declaiming and scheming and, you know, plotting to overthrow all of mankind. And, you know, so he gets to soften over the years as we investigate, well, you know, what does it mean to be, you know, the survivor of so much trauma, as Jill enumerated, right? All the things that he's experienced. And what does it mean to, you know, be an advocate for the oppressed, and what is appropriate and what isn't appropriate when, you know, people won't listen to, how do you get people to even come to the bargain table or the negotiation table, right? If if there's nobody even to negotiate with, sometimes maybe you feel like you have to take these more drastic measures. You know, and you can see, I think it was, you know, Al Ewing, the Resurrection of Magneto, kind of interrogates some of those, you know, that dichotomy of, and tries to, you know, explain in a consistent way why Magneto was choosing to act the way that he did in the Silver Age 60s comics. And how that's consistent with the Magneto of the past 30 years, who more often than not, I think, is, you know, on the side of the X-Men, right? He's a member of an X-Men roster of one sort or another, I think more often than not in the past 20 years. Probably, again, going back to Grant Morrison, although, you know, to what extent anything was or wasn't Magneto or Zorn in the Grant Morrison is a whole other conversation.
No, they rebooted that fast.
Yeah. But yeah, so, yeah, you know, they kind of started out, right, as these, you know, archetypal opposites. And, you know, I think have been converging and maybe have crossed in terms of people's estimations, just because of the way that comics get written and published and the way that modern readers, right, they're writing comics now for people like you and I who have been reading them for the past 20, 30, 40 years and mm-hmm. want to interrogate those. They're not really writing X-Men comics for teenagers who are just new to them and we'll read them for 3 years and then hop off and get replaced by another crop of you know, teenagers who are fresh to it, which is, you know, kind of the model for the first 20 some odd years right now. Mm-hmm. Now you have to tell stories that make sense to people who have been reading them for the past 40 years and who have adult sensibilities and adult understanding of nuance and psychology and all those kinds of things.
Yeah. And
perspective.
They've moved. I mean, the X-Men were seen as kind of like, okay, this is the civil rights movement of the 60s and into the 70s. But now I think in here, our present context and thinking about queer issues and who are the marginalized and who are seen as other or feared, kind of leaned in that way way too. And it is interesting that, out of the gate, Professor X, the hero, Magneto, the villain. And then as the time went on, Magneto's become more sympathetic, become the leader, been more understanding of things, and Professor X has gone more dark, or you've revealed more secrets. It is interesting to me that, he's Professor X is the professor or the father figure. And there is that dilemma of what do you tell your children? And when are they old enough to know some of your own secrets or your experiences? And so, you want to keep some of those things close to, and you don't want to show your hand. You don't want to share all your secrets. Like when my kids were little, I'm not going to share everything I did when I was a teenager, but later on to relate or to share cautionary tale or to be just a parent or teacher or coach, you share a little bit about more your lives. But there's times when Professor X is like, why did you keep that a secret? That his own students mistrusted him because they withheld that information. It's like, this is a secret. Should have known these things. He thought he was being protective or maybe overprotective of his students and children, but that loss of trust has been there over the years. And then I guess it was around issue 200 when you had that famous cover of Magneto kind of on trial. And then he ends up becoming a leader or a friend of X-Men. And then they have a relaunch in 91 and he's the villain again. They get back to the roots. But I do think the Krakoa age is interesting with Hickman and his run of seeing this kind of separate, secluded, their own nation, and Professor X and Magneto working together as a team with Moira, who, that was a whole retcon in terms of her mutant ability of being able to live life over again and learn from her life. It's just an incredible way to think through those things. Jill, anything there that Andy said that sparked some ideas in terms of, this duo together, their relationship with each other, and can we see the good in the other?
Yeah, I was thinking about truth and deception. And Magneto, for all of his faults, is so true and so authentic, right? He's impetuous, he's hot-headed, he feels rage and anger, and then and unfortunately people die.
Yeah. Right?
And then he's like, "Oh, maybe that was too far." And comes back, but he is ultimately like super protective of the mutants, where Professor X, we see, is deceptive. Like, if his whole first decade, like you said, was deception, was trying to keep his identity secret, keep the identity of the student secret and what they were doing and what their mission was. And I think ultimately that's why I gravitate towards Magneto, that even with its flaws, it's true. And what's true feels right to me.
There you go. Yeah, there's a question Andy sparked for me, like that. When do you come out and share your identity with others? And when is that, when you trust people enough? Maybe Professor X, I don't trust humanity to not see me as one of theirs if I reveal myself to them. I think, Jill, as people of color, you can't hide your skin color, right? You are who you are when you walk in a room, how people see or perceive you and what they automatically label you are or aren't. If you're a mutant, you can hide that. When do you reveal that? Someone who is queer or identifies that way, when they trust you enough to share their true selves or who they are and come out to you? I think some of that dynamic is there in the mutants. When their mutant ability, when they hit teenage land and their mutant ability actualizes and animates into the world, and then how do they learn to control it in the school in community with people like them? But then when do they reveal to the world or even their parents or their friends, and what will they think of them, is a big part of the X-Men story that I think relates to our own world. And then Professor X made some good decisions around, but then there's some bad ones. There's ones of like, maybe you should have been a little bit more honest with your students and with the world when it comes to that. Magneto is like, yep, this is who I am. Yep, sorry. And if you're scared of me, yep, you probably should be, because of what I witnessed, my own family tradition, that and what happened in the Holocaust. I never again, that's not going to happen again, kind of thing, which is part of that story.
Yep. And while people of color don't have the option to take off our skin, we can play respectability politics. Mm-hmm. And we see that, and we see people. Well, that's all I'll say about that.
Yeah. I hear you. Yeah. Are either of you familiar with the graphic novel God Loves, Man Kills? Have you read that one from Chris Claremont?
No.
Andy's read it. It's a graphic novel from the 80s. As a kid reading it, it did some. Sorry, my light's just cut off. It had a profound impact on me. It went a little harder with killing and violence and the division of mutants and violence. And you have Professor X and Magneto wrestling with a question on different sides, but really the main villain is this politician who really wants to oppress mutants. And Andy, do you remember the name of the politician? He's pretty famous. What was the politician's name?
Senator William Stryker.
William Stryker.
He got reimagined as a...
He becomes a politician?
Well, he was a politician and the original thing. Yeah.
Right. In the films, he's got a different backstory and so forth, but yeah, it's the same name.
Same name. And it's an incredible graphic novel. I forget the artist's name, but it is Chris Claremont, who there in the height of the 80s, but it's a standalone issue. I mean, there's this image of like, you know, Stryker pointing at Nightcrawler and going, really, that's who you want to be as like normal or human or whatever. And Nightcrawler is the most religious and more heartfelt than any of the mutants, even though he looks like a demon. But he's pointing at him like, that's who you want to have equal rights with you. I mean, it's just a powerful, powerful story. So I do recommend that to our folks out there. If you don't feel like you have to go to the comic store and buy 12 different graphic novels or different comic books on the shelf, because there's so many X titles.
Hey, podcast fam. Want to stay even more connected with the show? We've got you covered. Check us out on Instagram and Blue Sky, where we're posting exclusive content and bonus videos and fun updates that you won't get anywhere else. From sneak previews of upcoming episodes to bonus content, our social accounts are the best way to keep the conversation going. Plus, it's a great spot for you to interact with other listeners and share your thoughts. We love hearing from you. When you follow us, it helps us grow and continue bringing you the content that you love. Whether it's a funny poll, a quick clip from today's episodes, or just random thoughts, you'll feel more plugged into everything we're doing. So go ahead and hit that follow button on Instagram and Blue Sky. It's one more way to be a part of the show and keep the good vibes flowing. Thanks for being a part of the family, and we can't wait to see you there.
But if you want to get a good synopsis of the dilemma of mutantism, the dilemma of mutant rights and Professor X, Magneto, I think that graphic novel kind of hones in on that pretty well. And it's not like they necessarily point to Professor X or Magneto as right or wrong, but they're both kind of on the same team. Andy, am I remember that right when it comes to their relationship in that book?
Right. It is a little tough because the second X-Men movie does adapt some elements of that story, so it's a little bit hard to disentangle the two and without having visited either one recently. But yeah, I think there is an element in that story in the graphic novel of contrasting how Magneto and Professor X respond to the Stryker figure, who, you know, is also, I mean, he's Reverend William Stryker. He's not just a politician.
He's a
faith leader. Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, and so there's all kinds of critique of the sort of earlier days of the religious right and mm-hmm. Religious television pundits that were, you know, becoming a thing in the 80s. Yeah. But yeah, so you do see, I believe you're right, that you see both how Professor X and Magneto sort of respond to that. And there is some element of, you know, having to engage with each other's perspectives or approaches to rescuing the characters that get caught up by Stryker and his allies.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, the real villain, and we won't find the good in, is bigotry. I think in that graphic novel, you see kind of the far religious right, fundamentalism gone so far that they're going to other the other person. I think that when X-Men are done right, yeah, it's fun. They have mutant powers. Think about what would I do if I had mutant powers and how would I do good in the world and those things. But then it really leans into like, what does it mean to be not seen as or to be seen as less than human or less than or feared because of who you are? And so when we're finding the good in all these things, we can find good in Professor X and Magneto. But when it comes to the bigotry, fundamentalism, that other person, there's no good in that. There's no room for that. All right. So before we get to like the extra question, or I think thinking a little deeper, I and before we get that, what do you guys think in terms of like the recognition of diversity of gifts. What I love in comics, the team books, and I love how they use their different gifts, similar to Paul and his image of the body working together. And why would the foot say to the hand? I that goes to my head all the time when it comes to these team books, whether Avengers or Justice League, but definitely the mutants. There's a lot of drama when it comes to relationships and the relationships to their parents, relationships to the school students, and even the villains and who's on whose side. There's all that stuff, but I think there's something there when it talks about like our gifts that we have for the world. Jill has different gifts than me. I have different gifts than Andy, and he has different gifts than us. How does that work together? Is there something there in terms of that Professor X or Magneto? Because they both have teams. They have followers. They have people that live with them either on an asteroid or a mansion. What comes to mind with that, Jill, when you talk about these diversity of gifts and how we navigate the world?
Yeah, I mean, it's the beauty of these comics. I think it's why so many people love X-Men, is because we get to see the beauty in diversity, because the way the teams work together. And we see, like, with the humans that are in the universe that are not trying to kill the mutants, and with the mutants, like, everybody wants to fall in love. Everybody yeah. wants to be happy. We want to send our kids to bed with full bellies, you know, like, and I love the embracing of diversity in this comic series. I think that's, we have so much to take away from that. I need a minute to process to think about the rest of that thought. So Andy, if you want to go ahead and answer.
Yeah. Before Andy.
Sure. Yeah. You know, I think that has been a longstanding appeal of the X-Men, is the team-up move, seeing how these different abilities complement each other, right? And the way that you can do more together by combining these things than anybody can accomplish individually. And, you know, they really underline that in the Krakoa era with the concept of mutant circuits, right? These groups of people that can accomplish things like resurrecting fallen comrades and traveling beyond the edges of the observable universe to mine Mysterium, all kinds of impressive things that they do with these mutant circuits, as well as some more banal things like, you know, variations on the fastball special and so forth. Cool. And yeah, and that's always been a big appeal for me in the comics, is, you know, those team up moves and something that, you know, we've seen glimpses of in on screen, you know, something the comics or in the cartoons rather, I think, have done better than the live action films because of the logistical and financial challenges. But that's something I'm always hoping that the next iteration of X-Men live action adaptation will embrace, is that kind of those team up moves, those synergies that come from the characters working together. There's some cool bits. I probably the Days of Future Past film. Right, there's some sequences in that probably maybe have the best examples in the live action realm. I think that's really cool to see how people's different abilities can complement each other, and also the creativity in coming of, well, I can do X and you can do Y. Let's not just think about what's X plus Y, but, you know, how do you combine these things in ways that are unusual or unexpected, or can do things that's a whole new level of ability or accomplishment.
Yeah, and I think when Professor X and Magneto are done well, they're seen as coaches, as teachers, as leaders of a team, and empowering their students and followers to do that, not controlling, not keeping some, not controlling their mind or controlling their whatever, but like helping them become who they are meant to be. That's what leaders, that's what coaches do, that's what hopefully parents do. Leaders in your churches and communities of faith, you're empowering others to become the best that they can be. And so when they're doing their best in the comics, that's how I see them as those leaders. I'll be interested to see how they're portrayed in this next iteration of the MCU and what actors they choose. We've seen some of this in the Deadpool stuff and Wolverine stuff, and bring it over to the MCU. Who will show up in Doomsday? How will they do their own mutant movie when it comes to that? I will be how they embrace or distance themselves from the Fox movies. But yeah, Jill, other thoughts?
Yeah, I just love what both of you said. And because they are able to team up and work so well together, it encourages each individual to really embrace their own gifts and to live authentically and realize that what they have to contribute is accepted, where what we get from like fundamentalist organizations is like conform, everybody do the same thing, be the same. That's the only way to be accepted and to be loved is to put yourself aside and become like us. And the mutant world is the exact opposite. Embrace exactly who you're meant to be and figure out how you can fit in for the like flourishing of all of us.
Yeah, that's good. I like that. Yeah. I like that. Well, folks, in this episode, we didn't necessarily go toe to toe. We didn't have a big battle debate. We saw their flaws and we saw the good in each of these characters, some more than others, but really, like we're all on the same team on Systematic Geekology, and all of you out there, no matter what you're geeking out on, whatever what you're doing, you're part of our team. You have gifts, and we hope that you'll continue to keep geeking out with us in the days ahead. And I guarantee you, you know, if you don't know where to start with X-Men comics, you can contact Jill, contact Annie, contact me, or just at your local comic store, because probably in a few months they're going to reboot one of the X-Men titles to a number one, and you can just hop on there and they'll keep running with it. So don't worry if you don't know where to jump on, if it's too intimidating, there will be a reboot at some point.
Yep.
So we have an extra question that we're going to do, and I'm very curious about Jill and Andy. If they were to pick any mutant power other than Professor X and Magneto's powers, what would they pick to contribute to this team of merry mutants in the world? So hop on over to Patreon. You can just join up for $3 and or more. We have t-shirts for our primary political, all kinds of new merch out there that we love for you to have to come geek out with us and finding the good. So you could show that you're a fan out there in the world with some of our merch and by being a Patreon. So hop on over there and we'll let you know what mutant ability we want into the world. And who knows, I may wake up tomorrow morning and may obtain it. We'll see what happens. So thanks y'all. Thanks for listening, and share the faith, share the geek.
Hey guys, again, thank you so much for listening to our show and being part of the Systematic Geekology team. If you want to support our team, you can do so by going to Captivate. And I know most people don't listen on Captivate, but it's in the description wherever you're listening. You can go to our website. At the very bottom, you have the options to either subscribe and you'll get some extra content and fun stuff like our bonus questions, all those kind of things that hopefully you all come to love as much as I love making them with our fellow geekologists on the team. We also are hoping to do some future D&D campaigns, stuff like that, and all that's available for our sponsors. But if you don't have those extra funds and you're not really into the subscription thing, you can also leave a one-time tip, just one-time thing to help out our show as we kind of stay in the game with podcasting, keep relevant with all the technology and all that stuff. And it costs a lot to run a show, and we appreciate you for your help. Again, thank you so much for listening. We value your time, and it means a lot to us that you give us your time by listening to our show and supporting us in that way. If you feel led to support financially as well, we appreciate that. Let's get back to the show.
Hello there, listener. Thanks for listening. This is Evan Garcia. I hope you enjoyed this episode. We just wanted to come in and remind you that this episode is part of a bigger network of podcasts called the Anazal Podcast Network. We have great shows like the Whole Church Podcast, Kung Fu Pizza Party, and the Homily with Pastor Chill Will. Chill Will, the podcast has sermons from our host, Pastor Will. Great sermons every time. The Kung Fu Pizza Party is Brandon Knight showing his expertise and his passion for everything Kung Fu films. And he dispenses a bunch of wisdom. Great show. And the Whole Church Podcast, where Josh and TJ interview people from different denominations and church traditions to pursue greater church unity. It's a great podcast to see what other denominations are included. And we just want to say thank you so much for listening. See you next time.